Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Everybody, welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on an unseasonably warm day in October. I look to my right and lo and behold, it's a great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I'm living the dream. Did you see our buddy Nate Curtis's response to Will Gottlieb, like referencing me as the great one? And
no,
he goes,
I did not see
he
that.
Goes, did you look to the right before you said that? And I didn't pick up on it at first. I'm like, what's he talking about? And then I caught it and I'm like, oh man, that's pretty awesome. So I loved it.
I didn't see that the GOAT referenced you as the great one, which is pretty freaking cool. Was that on your text or your tweet about the CHGO show?
It was
how good it is.
Yeah. I was just listening and you know, it just kind of hit me. I was like, you know, man, these guys are like just super professional. Like they're funny. They all have a different view. Like I get like a lot of people are not a big fan of Matt's negativity. If you have a certain view, maybe there's other people who are like really negative who think Dave is too positive. And then you've got, you know, Will, who's obviously like very analytical and like kind of neutral. But I kind of like that. You got like Dave skewing positive, Matt skewing negative. You got Will skewing analytical. They have like a really great mix of different perspectives. They're all like really excellent in their own lane, you know, about discussing things they do. And, you know, they just really do a really tremendously good job at a professional show. And it's not to say like you have to love that show. Like, you know, some shows can be really professional. You don't care for them. It's not your cup of tea. But like, I was just sitting there thinking, I was like, man, these guys are like, they're professional radio media personalities. Like, and it's, you know, it's funny because we've known them all so long, right? So it's like, I'm like, no, these guys, this is like really high end work they do. And it just like, I don't know why, it just hit me as an epiphany one day. So I just tweeted it. And yeah.
Well, first of all, they are professionals.
Yeah, that's number one. Yeah. So it's like,
I think they're all fantastic. Yeah. I actually really have grown to love Matt. He's entertaining as heck. I rarely agreed with him probably before the last 2 years. And I've been almost consistently in agreement with him for the last 2 years. So maybe that's helped with my growing fondness for his comments, but he's so entertaining with the hat throws and the passion and, you know, Dave's a great combination of both. Like, I just think he's an incredible analyst. And every time he talks, I'm always nodding my head. That's a great point. It's very interesting. And the GOAT, I mean, what an analytical genius. The guy's so great. They're just awesome together. They are a great group. But I think we are blessed in general on two fronts as Bulls fans. Number one, I think the beat writers here are the best group of beat writers in the country. They're fantastic. Every single one. I love reading them all. And then there are a ton of good podcasts. I'm not going to name them all today because I don't want to leave anybody out besides CHGO since we're talking about them. But man, oh man, I listen to almost every single one. You know, Lockdown Bulls has been going on for a while too. I like that one a lot too. That Matt used to be on that show too. Yeah. And I used to listen to that religiously, but I am in agreement with you that it's really hard for us to come up with stuff to talk about on a weekly basis. And these guys are coming up with it on a daily basis and still make it entertaining and an enjoyable listen. It's really great stuff. So we are blessed as Bulls fans, I think.
Yeah, it is one of the coolest communities. I think you're right. Like I made that comment about their show and, you know, we know so many different podcasters, right? Like just all the time and going on each other's shows and whatnot. And so then I felt bad because like, no, I'm leaving people out. You know, like I love the Cash Considerations guys. I love, you know, Salim and
Bull Central.
You know, like, so it's just like, there's like so many
Gold,
people like, you know, we've worked with. And
Morris Bankston's got one now.
Yeah.
His own. Yeah. There's so many.
There's so many people who are so good.
I don't even hate mentioning it because we're going to miss them.
Yeah. And exactly. You know, like, Yeah, Drew Stevens. Anyway, whatever. Guy's awesome. It is like you just start mentioning people and there's just too many. But it's like, so I felt bad, but I was just like I said, it was a weird thing. I just kind of posted it because it was like super early and I had listened to the show and I was just like, man, these guys are so good. And I just like threw it out there and then like, you know, then a bunch of hilarity ensued. So, that was a long intro for that.
That's great we wasted the goat calling you the great one. I wonder what my nickname will be after this year. Well, I just want to be known as the prophet. That's all I'm betting. If Okoro comes out,
Dominic, you are the prophet. It'll be just in there. If Okoro is like awesome, no one can take that from you ever.
Pretty good week one, Doug. Pretty darn good week one. I don't know if you've been reading these quotes.
We got to get into that. It's funny, like in our little private communications, a little bit on Twitter and other stuff, I think I feel so differently than you about like everything that has happened to date. Like you seem like so excited. And I wonder if this is just like it's preseason excitement and you're just in on it. Cause you said this was like AK's best press conference. Like the press conference when they're like, what are your goals for the season? And he's like, we have no goals. Like our goal is not even to make the playoffs. Like that was just too bold. He couldn't say they want to make the playoffs this year. Like, I don't know. Like,
didn't you take that as though somebody told them, hey, don't make any promises about us making a play and it's only going to be negative.
Why are you scared to say it unless you just don't think you can do it? Like, I just don't understand that. Like, and if you don't think you can do it, then why are you not entering a deeper rebuild? So anyway, I was not impressed by his press conference. The idea like, oh, we're going to our strategy is just to try harder. Like that's their strategy. We're just going to try harder. We're going to try and take charges. We're going to hustle more. We're just going to try to out hustle people and we're going to defend the rim. Like he just threw out like every possible defensive buzzword he could into like one long rambling answer. Like who's going to defend the rim on this team? No one. Why would you even say that? Like if you really think you're going to defend the rim, why did you not bring in a rim defender? And I get that you can't, but it just means like what you said was a bunch of word salad that meant nothing. You're going to start Vucevic and you talked about defending the rim. Like get the hell out of here. Like it just,
I thought he,
yeah, it's just, ahead. It's just,
word I thought, salad. I thought, all right, maybe I was a little bit colored by one of his answers to Joe's question, which was a good question. He basically said, I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said, but he basically like, you know, you don't have that guy. You know, you might have a deep team, but you don't have that guy. And his counter was basically, if Josh Giddey and Coby White had the months that they did in March earlier in the year, he thinks those two guys would have been on the All-Star team. And I completely agree with him. That's a good counter to it. I wish he would have used my stat on Coby White winning player of the month. Only 25 awards have been given out since the end of COVID. Only 12 players have won that award. 11 of the 12 made the All-Star team, and Coby White is the only one not to. That would have been the proper answer. Like if he continues at that level, he will be that guy. Because in the month of March, he was the best player, not on the team, not in the division, in the whole freaking conference. So that's how he should have answered it. But he did bring that up. So I'm like, all right, not bad. I know it's a little, Doug, it's a low bar here. I mean, like, come on. I thought he did about as good as he, so you think he had a better press conference last year?
I don't know if he had a better press conference ever. It's hard to say because they're all so bad. Like, you know, like every time he talks, I'm so angry. So I get it. I didn't like this one, but maybe you're right. Like it was the least bad. Instead of saying it was the best one, I'm going to say it was the least bad because best infers in some way that it was good and it wasn't good. It was still terrible, but it was not as bad as some of the other ones. I will maybe grant you that I can get to.
I think we're in agreement. We got a consensus. Yeah. This was the best press conference.
This is as high as we could get to. Yeah, makes sense.
I have to be honest. You know me, man. I did not like at all what this guy was doing the last 2 years, but I loved, obviously, more than anyone probably on the planet, the Okoro move, and I thought the re-signing of Giddey at $25 million was done in a pretty good way at a number I did not expect them to hand out. So, like, those are two really good moves to me back-to-back. I'm on board. I'm trying to be positive here. And I got to say one more thing, too. I mean, regardless of what you think of Arturis, he did hire Billy Donovan. Billy Donovan, it's so refreshing to hear this guy talk, like, because he's – He is so freaking good. The first question I was, first of all, I'm like getting angry. Like, are they going to let Billy talk? We just got to listen to Arturis for the first 20 minutes here. And finally, he's let loose and he just comes out with this coherent litany of areas where the Bulls have to improve. And every freaking point was right on. Like, this is stuff that I've been looking at over summer. Where the Bulls need to get better. You compare and contrast Billy Donovan with that dope of a predecessor in Boylan, who would be, you know, talking about football and children on the highway and all that nonsense. What a, that revelation from Billy compared to where we've been before, and not just him, in general. Like, I think he's one of the best coaches. I'm really growing a little irritated. Like, I've been starting to call it out too. Like, he's sucked the last couple of years. You know, the defense hasn't been good. Where's the defensive talent on this team? Like, the stuff, I don't want to go down this road again. We've already kind of beat a dead horse with it, but Billy Donovan is a really good coach. But more importantly, in an organization without a really good, since Pax left, at least without a really good coherent, kind of spokesperson, he's it. He's good at that. I don't know if you felt the same about his comments in the press conference.
I don't know if I felt exactly the same about his comments in the press conference, but I do agree with you on Billy Donovan being a really great face of the franchise in general and being an outstanding coach. And I think he gets too much criticism, and we don't need to go over all of the reasons why that's true again, but I do agree with you there. You know, the one thing I'll say about all the stuff he said is like, well, who was coaching the team last year when all these things were weaknesses? It was you. Like, why were you not fixing this stuff a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago? Like, you've been here for 4 years too. So, I think each year you go into it with different focuses. Clearly, with DeMar gone and Vooch's role being smaller, they're able to play faster now than they would have been able to play in the past. I'm not sure I'm real excited about this whole new focus on physicality. Like, I agree they need to be more physical, but like, the Oklahoma City Thunder took the most charges in the league last year, and they took 3/4 of a charge per game. Like, making it a focus point to stand in front of people to try and draw an offensive foul when the most any team in the league gets is like 3/4 of 1 per game. And it's like inherently a dangerous play because you're just getting run over and you have to fall down. Like, I would not go about trying to make that like a big teaching point that I want to get to.
I got a counter on this one because Goat brought up a great point on one of his last shows, and that's taking charges is a form of rim protection. He's absolutely right in that. The Bulls had 13 charges all last season. You know, he highlighted it again. I don't think there's any question this team needs to be better in that area. And they brought in a Coral. I think one of the videos you already saw, he's taking a charge in practice on Julian Phillips. And I'm already doing fist pumps and hitting the drywall, doing round kicks. Like, it was so awesome.
Dumbest ever.
That's practice. Not Doug. No.
It's terrible. It's a terrible play. It's a dangerous play.
This is one area.
It almost never happens in the game. It's almost never called in your favor. Like, more times you try to take a charge, it goes against you than it goes for you. It's terrible defense.
Doug,
teach fundamental
with
defense.
With a son who's played on a high school team, I will tell you, every time one of his teammates or Ben took a charge, the team went nuts. They all got up. They all picked him up. It was a momentum turner. It's an energy play. Now, I understand all your points. Like, hey, it's not great to fall. Somebody's going to get hurt that way. There is something to it. It is an indication of a team's physicality. It is a good play.
It's a terrible
play. I am 100%.
It's a terrible play.
It's not a
horrible. I am not playing defense. I'm going to stand in front of you because I can't defend you. It's a terrible play.
Do you know how many
play.
Charges
it's a loser
Alex Caruso took?
Like, well, you know how many charges the most in anyone in the league took last year was the Thunder at 3/4 of a charge per game. So it's a play that barely happens. Yeah, it's a play that barely happens for you. It's like such a meaningless thing to coach into it because you're going to get barely any of them. You're going to get barely any. Like, the difference between the Bulls and the Thunder, one of the worst and the best teams in the league, was less than 3/4 of a single possession. And do you know how many times you try to take a charge and you don't get the call? And instead, you get a foul against you. And you're going to just make that your primary defense instead of defending people. Like, it's just not a meaningful thing to practice.
Totally disagree.
I know.
We are way off on this one. Number one team in the league in terms of paint points allowed. So the Bulls, this is relevant to discussion as the GOAT highlighted. It is a form of rim protection because most charges are taken near the rim. Outside of the circle. Unless if it's inside the circle, then it is a foul. But that's one of the things that Caruso and so many of the teams in Oklahoma City does want. They were number one in the league in terms of paint protection.
You have not addressed this fact.
Hold on a second.
No, just address this fact. Because I'm not gonna give you any chance to talk until you address this fact. It is a de minimis play. It is a de minimis play that barely happens. Like you don't get credit for half taking a charge. If you do not take the charge, you probably gave up an easy basket or you drew a foul. So every time you attempt the charge and you don't get the charge, a bad thing happens. Like it's not like it's not like a contest where like, oh, I contested a shot and it made the shot more difficult even if I didn't block it. Like if you do not take a charge, you have not played defense on the play or you fouled the guy. So three quarters of a charge per game is the most any team in the league had. Three quarters of one charge is the most. And if you don't get that call, you did nothing useful for your defense. It is not like getting in position and running someone off a shot or something like that, where if you tried to take a charge, it like made some positive impact, even if you didn't get the call. If you do not get the call, not a good thing happens.
Did you see the reaction to the team when Okoro took that charge against Julian Phillips in a practice? Did you see what happened?
I do not care. After that play? I do not care. People are excited about dumb stuff.
Every person on the team jumped out onto the field, onto the court, grabbed him. The energy went up like tenfold. So, I mean, we could stay here. It does a meaningless play. All I'm saying is there's video evidence that that's not true. There's video evidence that it does increase energy from the team. And if Billy Donovan is calling that out as a point of emphasis, I'm going to go with Billy's assessment on this. That's all I say. But let's move on. You don't like the charge. I like the charges taken.
But okay.
Enough taken there. I did want to highlight some other points that the GOAT brought up, which blew my mind. Do you know where the Bulls ranked last year in points per paint points allowed? I don't think he brought this up. I did research on this. But do you know where the Bulls ranked in terms of paint points allowed?
I don't know. 29th? 30th?
30th. Dead last. Yeah. 54 per game. Dallas, believe it or not, Dallas was second from the bottom, and they are 52.7. So it was D.C., Washington, New Orleans, Utah, Dallas, and Chicago were all the bottom five. The top five in the league in terms of giving up the least points per game in order, number one, Oklahoma City, two, Orlando, Boston, third, Golden State, four, Detroit, fifth, Milwaukee, six, Clippers, seventh, eighth, Cleveland, ninth, Minnesota. All those teams made the playoffs. It's an important thing to do.
Completely
to
agree.
The paint.
I completely agree.
And so Vooch is the great rim presenter. You know, obviously, I'm not going to harp on, you know, Vooch was fine for me last year since he actually was a stretch five for the most part and shot the ball great from three. And if he can continue to do that, you won't hear me complain. But if he resorts to, you know, the previous year Vooch at 29%, he's not a good rim defender. He's horrible at it. He puts a huge, massive albatross on your defense because you can only play one type of defense. But the GOAT highlighted a few stats about Zach Collins that I wanted to bring up to you and get your opinion on. Did you know the Bulls last year were 10 points per 100 possessions better with Zach Collins on the court defensively? That's number one. Vooch missed like seven games from it was the mid of February on. He missed, and the Bulls went five and four in all the games last year that he missed. But overall, I think they were regardless. They had a 108.4 defensive rating with Zach Collins on the court, 118 with him off the court. So that's second in the NBA with Zach Collins on the court, 29th with him off. Those stats are screaming to me. I think Zach Collins needs more time on the court. What say you?
I agree with you that Zach Collins needs more time on the court and that Zach Collins is better than Nikola Vucevic, which I think is what you're getting at.
The
only thing I'll say, well, if you didn't say it, I'll say it. He's better. The only thing I'll say about that is these numbers, are they only counting the time where Zach Collins is on the team? Because
that's a great question.
Because like the Bulls just played a lot better when Zach Collins was there, right? Like not just because of Zach Collins, Josh Giddey and Kobe White played a ton better. They played a much weaker caliber of competition. Like there's a lot of other things going on there, and I'm guessing what you're looking at is not really an apples to apples comparison of how they defended with Vooch on the court versus Collins on the court in games where they both played. And so while I agree completely with the end outcome that you're saying, I think that the data you're looking at is not properly quantified in a way that we can really use that data point as a fair criteria. But I mean, it's obvious that we're better defensively with Collins and Vooch. Like, that's not a question. Like, you just have to watch that for a little bit to know that that's true. Like, I don't think that's a difficult thing to sell me on, but I don't think that the gap is really like 10 points. I think that is that outsized gap is probably due to a number of other factors that are just not between those two guys.
Well said. I will also point out, though, I think Collins is a little bit underrated in some aspects of his offensive game. Like, I went back and watched and prep for my CHGO visit. 3-8, 2025, the Bulls won at Miami, 114-109. They had the ball with 20 seconds left, out of a timeout, sideline out of bounds. And out of the timeout, you see Spoelstra double teams. The ball goes to Kobe. He immediately double teams two perimeter players on Kobe White. Kobe White throws the ball into the corner to Zach Collins, who then fires a cross the court pass, incredibly good but difficult pass, to wide open Josh Giddey, who knocks down the three. Game over, Bulls win. I think Collins really showed me a lot too, not just defensively, but offensively, to the point that, you know, now I'm reading that that Billy Donovan wants to experiment with Vucevic and Collins lineups to boost the paint presence. Bulls, you know, as an issue to kind of counter this huge problem with points in the paint. What do you think of that idea of bringing Collins and Vucevic together in the paint to hopefully improve the Bulls' defense and stopping paint possessions and paint points?
I think you'll improve the Bulls' paint defense by just taking Vuce out of the game. I don't think putting Vuce and Collins in the game will improve that. Put Collins in the game and just put Modis in the game. That'll improve that more. But to your point on Zach Collins' passing ability, if I were to tell you that Zach Collins averages more assists per 36 minutes than Nikola Vucevic, would you believe me?
I would not believe you.
Well, it is true. For his career, Zach Collins, 3.5 assists per 36 minutes. Nikola Vucevic, 3.3 assists. 36 minutes.
That's a great stat. Where did you come up with that? Did you have that before the show?
No, I just looked it up right now while you were talking. So I was like, oh, I wonder if Zach Collins is a good passer, if you're just like making this up. And I was like, oh wow, Zach Collins actually has like a lot of assists. Like, and San Antonio, his years there, he was averaging about 4.5 per 36 minutes that whole time.
I am blown away.
So, you know, clearly a skilled passer. You know, and Zach Collins got paid for a reason. Like, he's had some problems with health, but I mean, he got paid for a reason. Like, you know, like he's a very solid all around center prospect who does a lot of different things. So, I mean, I think he's a good player, and like you said, he is offensively better than people think. Like, he averaged in his last few years in San Antonio 18 points per 36 minutes. Which is also not like all that much less than Vooch. He's like probably around, I don't have it in front of me now, but like probably around 22 per 36 minutes. You know, it's not like he's like a 10 point per 36 minute guy who just, you know, like he probably gets that more through heady play than like post-ups. But, you know, to average like so many assists while not really having the ball or as many touches as Vooch is even more impressive. Like, he's not actually touching the ball as much, and he's still getting more passes off. So, yeah, I think Zach Collins is pretty underrated. I've said we should start him. I think he's just better than Vucevic all around. He's way better on defense. I don't think you lose much on offense. Vooch is definitely a better shooter, but I just don't trust Vooch enough as a shooter to think that that's so important to me. And in the defensive gap, I just think it's much bigger.
Well, I'll tell you this. If Vooch heads back down towards that 29% from three that he had in the 23-24 season, get his ass out of the starting lineup as soon as possible and let him on his way.
Don't let him start now. Why are we even starting Vooch now? I do not understand it. Like, so many people will say things like, well, you got to get his trade value up. He's gone after this year. We couldn't trade him last year. You're not going to get anything for him in trade. Like, there's no reason to get his trade value up. I would just buy him out, to be honest. Like, just so I didn't have to watch him anymore, I'd be content with that.
I'm definitely not that level. I actually was quasi-impressed with the year he had last year. I thought he was much better than the previous season. And, you know, a lot of that comes around his ability to hit the three. I mean, he shot the ball incredibly well for a center, and I was very happy with that. So I do think he's valuable if he's going to play like he did last year, and I don't mind him starting. I understand why, Doug. He's a vet. He's kind of like highly respected on the team. He had a jab at his critics in the, I don't know if you noticed, in the press conference. He might have been talking about you a little bit, but you know, he's post Euro basketball. I saw a quote here. He feels very young. He's committed to 30 plus minutes per game. I agree with you to a certain extent. Like, I think there's way too much. Hey, we got to make him happy because everybody loves him. You know,
he's such a good dude. He is not part of the future of this team. He is an irrelevancy. You do not have to do a single thing for his benefit. If he whines and pouts, buy him out.
That's a good model.
There is no,
if he whines and pouts, buy him out.
There is no reason to do anything for Vooch. He is not a part of anything you are ever going to do again that's important. He is not going to get you anything useful in trade. There is no reason to worry about him in any way, shape, or form.
I think it's entirely possible Artur signs him to a two-year extension.
Dude, I will.
Next
summer. I don't know how many hat throws I can get. I do not own enough hats. The Bulls send me like 6 hats a year, and I do not own enough hats if we sign this dude to an extension.
I agree 100%. I mean, to me, like, the Bulls, their offseason next year, they have to have one mission: to find a rim defender, paint protector, a defensive presence, anchoring that team at the five. You have to get that. And if they don't, and they come back with this again, I mean, Collins is a good stopgap measure, and I'd seriously consider bringing him back, you know, assuming he plays like he did last year on a 1 or 2 year deal. But there's no way Collins is going to make $18 million next year. There's no way Vooch is going to make $20 million. Both those guys are going to probably be paid somewhere between $6 and $10 million a year, maybe a little bit more. I don't know. What would you predict those guys will sign for next year?
I think
next year
Vooch will be on the vet minimum. And I think Collins will be at like $8 million a year.
That kind of, you're probably closer to right than I am on that one. A couple other things I did want to talk about. Do you have any, first of all, any thoughts about any of the comments that you saw on the media day? Did you want to discuss any of those, or even shortly thereafter, before I go a couple rapid fire points?
We could just talk about how awesome Modest is, like everyone else, if we want to. But sure, I'll just say in short, I loved all of his comments. I love that he had confidence. Yeah, whatever. That's cool. I like that. I hope he does really well and backs them all up and whatever else. But the Modest hype is so out of control that I don't want to harp so much on the comments, because they just like, they bleed into like the hype machine that's already like nuts for him. So I'm really, really happy with him. I hope he does great. But yeah, otherwise I didn't have much to say about any of the other comments. So maybe the other thing is, like, I thought it was funny they tried to trick Josh Giddey into complaining about the contract negotiations for like 7 minutes of his like 12 minutes on the podium. Like, I was like, it was like not until I think our buddy Will was the first one that asked him a question that was actually about basketball. Like, they just kept like just reasking, like, aren't you mad that the Bulls negotiated hard with you? And like, he just kept saying, like, I'm thrilled to be back here for 4 years. We got it done. It's all business. You know, that's how it goes. And, you know, like, I'm psyched to be a Bull. They were psyched to have me, and it's all done. And then they'd ask him the same question in some other way. But like, no, really, aren't you pissed? Aren't you really mad? Like, underneath, like, I know you have to say that, but beyond that, aren't you, like, you know, ready to go stab Arturis in the eyeball or something? And they'd be like, nope, I'm really happy that I'm here for 4 years and got this done. I, you know, like, I have $100 million. Like, what are we talking about? Like, so I thought that was funny. That was the only other comment I had. And then I guess maybe the reveal that Coby White is injured, and, you know, hopefully that doesn't become a thing.
Yeah, that was a major, major disappointment. Because, I mean, I think we talked about it in the offseason. I said the only guy in this team that we can't, you know, really find any modicum of success is if due to injury is with Coby White. Like, even Josh Giddey got Trey Jones behind him.
You got a lot of people
who can play point guard
if you need to.
Kobe's like the one guy on the team that has that combination of, he's able to hit the three and still score off the dribble.
Yeah, we don't have anything else. Yeah, I agree with you.
There's nothing like that.
He's the most unique player. We don't have a lot of other guys who can operate there. Maybe the one other comment I'll have, and I don't want to get too excited about it, but, you know, watching Patrick Williams, and I think this was maybe after the second practice or something, but there was a video of him just answering some random question on Twitter, and he just looked a lot leaner and more in shape. And he noted Casey Johnson said he lost some weight. He wouldn't say how much. And I know you mocked that comment and whatever, and I'm not trying to disagree with you.
I didn't mock it.
Well, I mean, you said like that's not his issue, like he's just a loser or something, and I'm not even...
No, that's how it is.
Okay, whatever. I'll let you get to what you said. I'm not trying to bash you in this. I mean, I know that's normally... You should always be defensive when I'm talking because I am trying to bash you most of the time. But in this case, I'm not. But you made some comment about Pat that was derogatory and probably an accurate one, you know, just to put it out there. But I do think, like, yeah, one of his problems was he just looked slow and unathletic last year. And, you know, if he leaned down and changed his body composition a little bit and he's got more burst again and he gets back to kind of the athletic prospect he was coming into the league instead of being a guy who can't even dunk a basketball, like, that's probably a good start. Like, he's got a lot of other things he needs to do in terms of his mental approach to the game and understanding what's going on around him. But just having a little more pep and burst would be a really good start to a rebound season for him. So, you know, it's a really small thing at this point, but I'm happier with that than some other news about him, I guess.
So I'll read the actual comments.
Okay.
The first, it started with Patrick Williams said, from Casey Johnson, Patrick Williams said he slimmed down on purpose, won't reveal weight, but said he focused on lean muscle. Said his whole off season started with hard look in the mirror, quote unquote, I need to be better. And then my reply was, standstill P. Will's weight has never been the problem. He rarely plays the game with the intensity that is required. Simply put, he plays the game far smaller than he is. He's a poor rebounder, never gets to the free throw line, poor block numbers. He did improve as a passer last season. So I tried to give some positivity there. And then you
came
that with,
sounded deeply well, he looks positive.
What?
That sounded deeply positive what you said there. Yeah. Good call. I think I completely mischaracterized you by saying you trashed him with that comment. I take it all back.
Okay, are you serious?
No, I'm not serious. I was being sarcastic, Fred. Yes, that you just completely you called him standstill P. Will, and his problem is he has no intensity. So yes, I think you were ripping on him there, and I think how I characterized.
I said he was a better pass.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, he looks, and then you go, well, he looks significantly less athletic last year, which certainly was a problem. Hopefully, changing his body comp gives him back more burst. And then I said, did he really? When has he ever been this uber athlete that he was advertised as? I mean, significantly less athletic from what? He's never been that athletic in the first place. How many dunks did he have 2 years ago compared to last year? He's just not an aggressive player. I got cut off here. What else did I say? He's just not an aggressive player. And all I was saying is like, yeah, I agree with you that he wasn't as athletic, but I don't think the delta was anything like massive. He looked the same guy that he's been.
I felt the delta looked pretty big. Maybe there's two different things. I think you're right about everything you said about Pat. Like, I'm not trying to disagree with you. So this is kind of like a yes and moment. Like, yes, you are right, and I think the athleticism was also a big problem. Like the lack of rebounding, the lack of intent, and I view to me the lack of intensity is really a lack of basketball awareness. Like, he doesn't know where he needs to be fast enough, and then he just can't get there in time. But I thought like last year, like he looked slow at point of attack defense. Which before, when he had people in front of him, I thought he was better before. And he was like dunking balls off the rim because he couldn't get high enough. Like, he wasn't doing that as a rookie. Like, he was never an explosive off the dribble guy because he just doesn't have any ball handling skills. So he wasn't dunking like crazy ever. But he just looked notably less athletic. And that could have been partially the foot injury last year that he was still recovering from, and partially just not being in shape for like being the foot injury, like keeping him off his feet for like 6 months, right? Like, it's hard to be an elite athlete if you can't run for like a long period of time. So like some of those things we talked about at the beginning of last year too, like this is going to be a tough year for him. Like, he's not going to be in great shape. And so either way, I'm happy that he's in better shape now. Is that going to solve all his problems? No. I think all of the key things you mentioned are still true. I think this is my only point was like, I think what you're saying is true, but I think this other thing is also important, and it's not going to move the needle from him being like a really, really bad player to a great player. But I think it is a thing that can get him back to maybe a more neutral player. And like, that's what we have to hope for. Like, I'm not talking about Pat ever being a star player. I'm like, can you be worth your contract one day? Like, if you can play defense again and shoot threes again, like, I feel like you could be worth your contract maybe. And getting this athleticism maybe helps him play that defense better. Yeah.
I think Patrick Williams has always been better guarding fours and threes. This idea that he's let him lose weight, let him get more athletic and guard three, he's never been good laterally. He's blow bys. I mean, we see, I can highlight many examples where he just gets blown by. And it's kind of tied into a few comments I've heard on national shows where people are trying to make this comparison with Patrick Williams and Isaac Okoro. Those two players couldn't be any more different. First of all, Okoro, if you look at his highlights, his defensive highlights, you'll notice he's guarding Trae Young, Jalen Brunson, Dame Lillard. There's no way in a million years Patrick Williams could ever remotely guard any of those guys. Like, Okoro is best guarding ones and twos and just beating them up. That's where I think he's at his best. I think the Cavs asked him to guard fours too often, like guarding up. And I think it's the exact opposite with Patrick Williams. Patrick Williams needs to be guarding up. He needs to be guarding fours, maybe even fives, big threes. He's not good at guarding twos. He can't guard ones, period. And, you know, he's not good guarding quicker threes. That's where he struggles. So those two players aren't remotely alike. Okoro has far more defensive versatility. And I think I'm glad to see, based on the comments in this first week of camp, that the whole team clearly realizes it based on, you know, the feedback you're seeing. And I think the whole fan base will soon realize it too.
I think you're correct. Everything you said there, I think, is correct. The only thing I'm going to add to that is that I think he'll defend fours better with more athletic burst and less weight. Like, I don't think he's getting overpowered by fours. Like, I think I think this will help him do that. But I agree he's more of a 3-4 defender than a 1-2 defender. Maybe some twos, but like a 2-4. The only thing that's a problem with him on fours, and definitely a problem with him on fives, is he can't box out. So it's like when you get a bigger guy that is going to attack the glass, like he's really the last guy you want to put on him. Which is an area he just needs to improve on. He's a terrible box out guy, which you've highlighted lots of times.
I had this massive debate, like, why is that?
Doesn't know what he's doing. Just no court awareness. That's what it is. No court awareness. That's why he can't box out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, that's part of it too. But to me, the bigger reason is, you know, like, screen navigation is a skill. It's a massive skill. You see, Caruso is one of the best in the league at it, and Okoro is excellent at it. And if you're going to be guarding like the best perimeter offensive player on the opposition, usually that's a 1, 2, or 3. You better be able to navigate the steady stream of big picks that are going to be headed your way. And he's never been able to do that. He takes a half an hour to get around a well-set pick. Coral's much better at that, and that's why he's the better answer. That's why he should start, period. I do want to get into that before we wrap this up.
Let's do it. A
lot of discussions from people I respect and love that they seem to be pretty high on starting Herter over Okoro. And to the credit of both players, you know, Herter and Okoro, they were like, whatever Billy says, for the most part, I'm kind of paraphrasing, whatever Billy says, we'll go with. I think based on Billy's comments so far, Okoro's got to be the lead in this. I think it's the right decision. You can't go out every, I don't know how we did it last year, but there's no one even close to Okoro. And he's going to guard the best player on the opposition. If that's a 1, 2, or 3 on the offensive side, it's a huge advantage. That's who he's going to be assigned to. I'd like your thoughts. Do you feel like Herter should start ahead of Okoro? Or and I heard the GOAT come up with a lot of good reasons why he thought Herter. I'm sensing he didn't really come out and say it in so many words, but he was bringing up a lot of points. Well, they were really good with Herter starting last year, etc. And he brought up a bunch of stats, you know, like, and you're in agreement with this, that he definitely has more gravity as a shooter. My counter is, like, he brought up a stat that I don't think Okoro took a contested three last year. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly right. You should never take a contested three when you're a teammate to Donovan Mitchell and Garland and you have all the offensive talent that the Cavs have. I don't think anybody should be taking contested threes unless the shot clock's coming down to zero. So that's the type of player that Okoro is. He takes good shots. He doesn't take dumb contested shots. I'm not saying that Herter does that either, but there's just a general idea like Herter's this incredible shooter. I think he's good. He's not great. He's not like that guy as a shooter. So I think the Bulls would be far better off focusing on the defensive end and having that point of attack defender and bringing Herter off the bench. Your thoughts? Enough of me blabbering on this topic.
I think if you start Vooch, you should start Okoro. You know, like, you can, and if you start Collins, it's a little bit more optional. Maybe you could start Herter to get.
That's a great way of putting it. Well said.
I think it's like a little bit of like, how do you provide balance to your starting lineup overall, right? So it's, if you've got Vooch, if you're playing him, you're hoping he's going to be a shooter, and then you got Kobe, who's a shooter. You don't have a lot of shooting on this team, right? So, in that sense, I would lean towards starting Okoro to get some more defense in there, because you have no rim defense with Vooch. So, you know, Modest and Okoro, if those guys are starting, hopefully give you a little bit of that. You know, and depending how camp goes, I think you could easily make the case for starting Io as well. I think Iowa is maybe last in line, like right now, but like it would not take much for me to see him win that job either, as the guy who can kind of do a little bit of everything if he's able to prove he can shoot in camp and is fully healthy and plays strong defense. So I view it as a camp battle, but I think a little bit is just like kind of just how you want to mix and match your lineups together to get the best overall team out there, I think becomes a piece of that decision.
Agreed. I do feel, I mean, Coral's 225 pounds of granite, and you know, Iowa's 200 soaking wet. And I think people have a tendency to kind of like underestimate that type of difference in just like power. I mean, when I played high school basketball, I took notes religiously on the teams that I would play. And I remember weight was a big thing. Like I was only like 160 pounds, believe it or not, in high school, but they would play me at the four often, and I'd be guarding these guys who were like 180 or 200. And I remember I took a charge. I always took notes on when I took a your favorite. I took a charge against a guy who was like 180 on Leo. And a few games later, took a charge on a guy from St. Francis de Sales who was like 210. And I thought my kidneys ended up in the third row. It was such a difference in just 30 pounds, 20 pounds, such a difference in power on the same play. And it's underestimated by fans, I think, and just how much 20 pounds means in terms of just power and strength and physicality. So I don't think that Iowa's even in this discussion right now. At least Herter's got more size than he does, but I love Iowa. I think he's very versatile and he's going to be a big key to this team. But I like him come off the bench better.
I don't think he's in the discussion right now either. I just said I could see how he could be. That's all. Like I think he's starting in like in third or fourth. I think like Pat is also a guy who could start if he plays well enough. I know neither of us think he's going to, and probably I don't think Iowa is going to either. But I think those guys have I think those four guys, it's fine to let them all compete for it, knowing that Herter and Okoro to me have an edge going into it. If I had to guess, we're going to start Herter. It's going to be Giddy, Kobe, Herter, Matas, and Vooch. And I just think like Billy seems like he'll just roll the ball forward, like with what he's done in the past a lot of times, and doesn't want to bump up against guys' egos, which is why Vooch is still starting. And I think Herter will have a little bit of pole position for the same reason. He's been the guy who's been able to play the most minutes. He was here last year. He did a great job last year. Of the guys we had last year, he was the best player. So I think it's his job to lose from a practical standpoint. So I think that's what will happen from a what should happen. I don't think it's always about putting your best players, even if you think Herter is a better player than Okoro, in more situations. It's not always about putting your best players in the starting lineup. It's about coming up with the lineup that's going to complement each other and play the best as a team. And so I would look at it a little bit more that way, but I would expect it.
Yeah. You expect it to be Herter?
Yeah.
Ahead of Okoro?
Yeah. I think that's what the Bulls will decide. I'm
really?
I'm thinking, like I said, I would start, if you start Vooch, I would start Okoro to better balance the lineup. But I don't think that's what we will actually do. I think what we'll actually do is just start Herter.
Oh, I think it's pretty clear in what Billy Donovan has said so far, Okoro is going to be starting at the three. Uh-huh. That's the right decision.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. Out. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could also, like I said, I think it's camp battle. Like, I think they're going to fight it out. Like, I don't think it's going to be, they'll probably try both, and then they'll see like how the unit performs. And even whether it's just as a starter or just like a five-man unit, they'll probably play those guys at different times and try and figure out like which unit they like more. And they'll probably be trying different variations in practice to see what units they like more, right? We won't even get to see that. But my guess is like these guys are all close enough in that range that I don't think there's a hard decision made at this point. I think there will be a chance for someone to earn it.
We shall see. Well, on that note, I got to bring in the BRB as I'm headed to Purdue this weekend to watch the Illini play my daughter's school. And I'm really looking forward to hanging out with her. And DT, as always, it's great to talk to you. What a great time of year. You got the Cubs advancing to the next round. You got football. The Bears are playing a little bit better. You got the Bulls. I mean, what a great month this is. October, my birthday's this month. It's going to be awesome. Isn't your birthday this month?
You're also, an October birthday? When's your birthday?
Yeah, it's the 29th.
29th, okay. Of October. And yeah, I'm the 10th, so 10-10.
Oh, 10-10, that's awesome. Yeah, so we got to celebrate your birthday. Also, don't forget, the 22nd, I haven't checked my C-Rad Fred email in a while, so who knows? Maybe there's a number of requests to attend the Tonus opening night game on the 22nd. CRedFred@gmail.com if you want to come and visit with Doug and I and have fun. Watch that first game on the 22nd at the Palatial, Doug Tonis Estate and beautiful house. So you'll have a great time. There's always good food and a lot of intelligent people talking Bulls. And as we bring in the BRB, until next time, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.